Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the so funny about me? Tell me what's wrong.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination. Hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. Ricky on the board. SP Futures up 675. NASDAQ Futures up 2. As we seem to be relentlessly going higher every day, although it seems to be slowing down a hair, but I don't think that matters. It still keeps heading up. Continue to have valuations continue to grow in the same stocks. I mean, I started talking about NVIDIA's valuation at 160. Well, now it's 173. So I guess the more I talk about it, the higher it's going to go. So that's the way that all is. We had no teams play last night. We got Caleb Williams seemingly can't find receivers in the first couple of days of practice. Other than that, everything's fine. Kevin, how are you?
I'm doing okay. Good morning, Tom. Good morning, Ricky. Good morning, listeners.
Yeah, so I was supposed to be on 820 yesterday as a guest, right? So I'm waiting around. All of a sudden, a storm comes through, and I was kind of listening on the internet. And all of a sudden, the thing goes off. Evidently, their tower got whacked by lightning when that storm came through. So I don't know how long they were off. But I think they're back on, but I'm not sure. I'm like, did those guys... I get no call saying, hey, you're on the air. And I'm like, all of a sudden the guy says, hey, we got a problem. I go, well, that's all right. We'll fix it in a couple of minutes. Well, it wasn't. So that's where there it is. That's what that is. Maybe it was a whatever. But the storm came through
here
yesterday.
I'm sure they have some kind of backup where they can switch over, but I don't know how that works. You know, I don't know the industry. But you would think.
Well, the thing came through yesterday was pretty intense, and those towers probably have some kind of a lightning rod, but I would imagine still if they take a hit, it takes a little while. I mean, I don't have no idea, Kevin. I mean, somehow, if they power them back up, I don't know how you do that, but... Or if it's a transformer near there, or maybe it could have been that. It could have been something near it.
Or if there's an automatic switch over to something else.
Yeah, I think you got one tower. I don't think you have two, so... I'm not sure. But whatever it was, they were off the air, even though, and it came through pretty darn hard here. It was real fast. It was fast moving. It was moving like 50 miles an hour.
Yeah,
but
same thing here. When it blew through, it blew through real quickly.
Pretty serious rain for a little bit. You know, what the heck, you know? And then they keep saying it's going
to
be...
We're very prone to losing power here, so I'm glad we didn't.
Are you one of those dudes with the real backup generator system?
No, I should get one. You know, I've thought about it. I have all kinds of... you know, because of the infrastructure here, I have all kinds of, batteries, you know, inside the house type of batteries with and surge suppression and all of that kind of stuff, because I don't want to lose anything if power goes off and backs on, or if it blinks out and blinks back on. But I haven't gone generator yet, and I probably should.
Are you enough of an electrician to know?
But it happens, a long-term outage is so infrequent, the financial case for it really isn't that good. I've had a couple of times when I've had to go check into a hotel, but even that is a fairly mild cost by comparison.
Now, if you get in the hotel and they lose power, the little thing where you throw a quarter in them besides the bed doesn't work, does it?
I'm a little bit higher end than that.
Well, you know, those things had their purpose, you know, for a while. I don't suppose they still have those. I can't imagine. You imagine what those...
The last time I saw such a thing.
I think I was in Vegas years and years ago. One of the guys stayed at one of those places. And I'll bet if you put one of those on eBay, you'd probably get something for it. I don't even know. I mean, I can't imagine those things been built in the last 30 years. Anyhow.
I remember the last time I saw one of those massage beds, and I can't remember the last time I was on eBay.
Yeah, well, I still get stuff from eBay. Once in a while, I look on there for... I'm bored. I look for old trucks on there. And it's become a, well, at least for trucks it is, people just put these, you know, buy it now prices absolutely through the wall, and if people don't bid that high, then they just take it off and put it back on 2 weeks later. And there's they're not really an auction. They're an auction if you get, you know, buy it now for, you know, $25,000 or something, and if it's, and if you get to 22, they might let you have it, but if the highest bid's 19, they just take it off, and, you know, minimum not met, and it comes back on again in a month. So it's kind of a big game, looking for the one fish, basically.
Back in the day, too, I don't think I ever bought anything on eBay that wasn't the buy it now price. So just look at it and go, if that's a decent price, I'll take it. Otherwise, I'm not going to sit there and watch bids for it and, you know, and compete for it. I never was willing to shop that hard.
I wonder how they managed to lose, you know, some of their spots to Etsy and some of these other things. I mean, because they...
First of all, they got their loan cheating by Amazon, but after that...
Well, but I mean, your biggest... I don't know. I haven't bought anything online like that in ages, but I think a lot of people use Etsy. A lot of people use... doesn't Facebook have one now, too?
Don't know. Haven't been on Facebook in a long time, either.
Yeah, well, I've never been on it, but I've heard that they have a... What do they call it? Facebook Marketplace or something?
Yeah, and Walmart has a ever-growing marketplace as well. That's a big part of their strategy was to make a run at Amazon and build up their marketplace. And they have things like their version of what Amazon Prime does. It's an interesting competition, but Amazon got so far out ahead of the pack, and for lots of reasons. But what they really did was they pushed the envelope on delivery, that has been an ongoing thing where they just deliver faster than anybody else, and they've made a whole industry look at fast delivery as an important point of competition. And just have stayed ahead of the pack for the most part. Walmart is actually very good about delivery times. They have some options because for them, every store that they have is a distribution center. So it's pretty easy for them to fulfill orders quickly.
I actually have gone on their site and... But if it's at a Walmart, like, you know, if I go to Orland every weekend, if it's a site, a Walmart between here and there, I just pick it up rather than have it sent.
Well, I understand that, and it's real easy. You know, if you want to order for pickup, it's real easy to do that online too. They have the options, and you know, just from looking at it from a competitive standpoint, I don't know if they'll ever catch Amazon or take over on Amazon, but they have carved out, you know, they've carved out their little. Their little area of, and you know, it's something that people often forget to do is, you know, it's real easy to go on Amazon and say, okay, what's it cost me shipping tomorrow, good, click. It's probably worth it to take a look on the Walmart website and see if they'll beat the price. The thing is, if you're not a member of, you know, what their prime alternative is, I forget what they call it, but if you're not a member of that, then shipping can be expensive.
I bought one thing on Amazon, I want to say 15 years ago. It's such a horrible experience, I've never bought anything since. And other people seem like they can't live an hour without it.
Excuse me? Here, let me mute for a minute.
I had such a horrible experience that I never bought another thing there, and I don't miss it at all. And yet, I know people can't go an hour without ordering something to show up at their door. And it's just, it's either a habit you get into or a habit you don't.
Yeah, I would say that's true.
It is sort of interesting and stuff like that. We got everybody croaking, eh? Hulk Hogan yesterday.
It's been a bad week. I think, you know, aimed at millennial heroes. There's been, you know, I've seen on TV a lot of reporting about Hulk Hogan, and I was never a wrestling fan, so I don't have that. I don't have that emotional attachment that you see a lot of younger people younger than me anyway have, and a big nostalgia hook on it. So you know, it's noteworthy, I guess. And you know, as you, if you hear about the guy's life story, it's okay. It's been interesting. There, you know, there's a lot there, but that's not a big one on my radar.
Well, when I was very young, I used to watch the wrestling. Was it on Saturday morning? Was it on right after Roller Derby, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, but you're talking about the days of the real stars, you know, UConn Moose Cholak and people like that.
Bruiser and Crusher, those guys. Yeah. But I always knew even at a young age it was acting by big, huge guys and very good acting.
No, it was real. Come on, burst my bubble.
So, but it was fun to watch. So I got a great Hulk Hogan story for you. His personal physician was John DeJarian, Dr. J's doctor. His dad was a real Dr. J, not like John. He was a serious transplant surgeon, a great guy. I really loved the man. And so he was Hulk Hogan's personal physician, right? So so somehow or another, his dad knew, what was it, Vern Gagne, one of those guys. But anyway, this had to be in the, it was before I moved into my house in Beverly, so it had to be 84, 85. They come and they're having a big wrestling meet at the UIC Center. So we get these tickets, John and I and some other knucklehead. We go over there and we got great seats, and they start, you know, the wrestling and they're doing all their crazy stuff. And there's girls that are crying if certain guys like lose and stuff. And John's telling me, yeah, you know, they almost have a guy pinned and he pops up, you know, and he reverses the hold, and then they get next guy's almost pinned and then they reverse the hold, and all of a sudden they pin the guy in a second. You say, well, wait a minute, how'd that happen? He says there's a guy under the mat with a timer, and whatever it gets to the right time, and he knows the right guy's supposed to win, he's on top of you. Like, he whacks the bottom of the whatever the ring, and then it's over. Okay, then. So it's there somehow or another, and I didn't follow it. You know, I never followed it that much, like you're saying. Evidently, the week before, or 2 weeks before, they had some huge meet, and Hulk Hogan was the champion, and all of a sudden he gets disqualified in that particular match, so he's no longer the champion. So the new champion is wrestling some other dude in the main event at this thing we were at. And, you know, the place is mad. So we're sitting there, and all of a sudden this huge roar comes up. Just as they're about to start the main event. This huge roar comes in, and who walks in but Hulk Hogan, like, you know, in his version of street clothes. And he starts pointing at the ring and yelling, I should be in there. This should be my fight. And the place is going bonkers, Kevin. And all of a sudden, he pulls out of his pocket this ticket. And he holds the ticket up over his head. He goes, I had to buy this ticket to get in here, and I should be in that ring. The place is going berserk. I'm sitting here going, I haven't seen showmanship like this, like, ever. So I remember it to this day. So then he starts, somehow they hand him a mic, and he starts talking that if he was in there, he'd win so bad the other guy couldn't even have Dr. Najarian and put him back together again. John and I are sitting there laughing our butts off, basically. And you know what? I enjoyed the evening. It was total showmanship, but, you know, it was fun.
Yeah, cheesy as can be, but yeah, it is. You know, I don't have anything against it. I just wasn't, you know, I just wasn't involved in it. But yeah, it you know, it was only aimed to be fun. It was never about anything else but let's have fun.
Well, except the guys are huge.
We'll salute that as a worthwhile goal. We don't do that enough.
Well, the guys are huge. They're amazingly well trained to do the stuff they're doing and not kill each other. When you start having a guy, you know, 280 flop off the ropes in the top one and land on a guy.
Very physical, yeah.
Remember the dude we had on the show a couple times back in the day? John Layfield?
No.
He came out, he was a wrestler, and he was, you know, he wasn't Hulk's level, but he was, you know, maybe first iteration down. And he had like four or five different wrestling names every time he went to a new handler from, you know, Vern Gagne and a Moose Cholak, whatever those guys were. He had he go to, and he was married to Meredith, Whitman? Whitfield? Well, she used to be on CNBC all the time. She's a big analyst, for stock analyst, and they live in Bermuda, of all places. But that night, guess who was there? Dick the Bruiser was there. Yeah. And so was, remember, the Claw, the Baron von Ranschke?
Yeah.
Well, that was the first night he had somebody in the grip, and the guy got out of the grip. The place went crazy. But then, of course, he got him back in the grip, and the guy succumbed. But the guy was like, God, Kevin, he had to be 6'8", 6'9", this huge man. And John says he was an attorney up in Minneapolis during a week. Just this huge guy that had this knack. He had to be damn near 60 years old when he was doing this. He still looked great. I mean, you know, those guys had, I think those guys had a nice career.
A lot of money to be made. Yeah, and, you know, I'm sure it was a blast.
I think they all had a pretty good time. Bruiser looked a little old. He was probably in his 70s. But he was a big guy back in, because he and Crusher were always, remember the tag teams? One guy get his ass kicked, and he could, as long as he could make it over to the ropes, the other guy'd come in and save him. And who'd think of this stuff?
And then eventually a tag team would have roped into all four guys would be in the ring, you know, duking it out.
Oh, yeah. you could write the script. But I couldn't believe the amount of people who actually thought it was real. You know, guys losing and girls are bawling and stuff. I'm like, God. They were into it. I mean, anyway, for fun at the old ballpark. The other guy is, I don't know if Ricky can get up something. Chuck Mangione, one of my favorite concerts. I saw him. He was terrific.
Yeah. So, yeah, there was a loss. There was a loss our generation can appreciate probably more than most.
I saw him up at Milwaukee Summerfest one year. God, was he good. I went one year and saw him. The next year I saw Maynard Ferguson and the Ramsey Lewis Trio. I did well at Summerfest. It was all at the Miller Jazz Oasis. I never went to the main show.
Yeah, when I lived up there, I would occasionally go to a main stage show. That was generally a separate ticket, and they had some really good ones. But really, you could just there were so many different stages there that you could just hang out and enjoy yourself.
Sitting at a picnic table, buck and a half pitchers of beer, having a brat. How does life get any better than that, Colin?
Yeah, well, in Milwaukee, you know, when they have all kinds of festivals up there too. So the Summerfest grounds are used for something, every couple of weeks, and as well, the main stage. Even when there's no Summerfest or there's no other festival going on there, they will still have at the amphitheater. They will still have some good concerts. I saw Tom Petty there. I saw Neil Young there. Ben Harper, some of those kinds of people there have done really, really good shows. So Milwaukee in the summer is a lot of fun because there is a lot of live music. Irish Fest is really good. It's a really big festival, and they get a lot of big names in Irish style music, as well as you know, just people I've never heard of, but then I see them in the show and they're really, really good.
A couple of my trading characters are going to a German Fest next week.
Yeah, German Fest is pretty good, yep.
Now, I the first time I went up, the Summerfest grounds now, for the, you know, those that don't know, well, it's been a long time, but they're really nice. Before that, Kevin, they had, you know, they had the stages, but there wasn't, I don't think the big main stage was anywhere near as nice. And they actually had a big midway, you know, with rides and throw the ping pong ball in the thing and get the goldfish, that kind of crap. And
then, yeah, and then they don't have that anymore, yeah. or didn't when I was there. But they, you know, you can still, get on the overhead, whatever they call the thing, gondolas or something like that. You can still get on that and ride to the opposite end of the grounds, and kind of oversee everything. And there's even, you know, we talk about the stages, and they have the jazz stage, and they have a blues stage, and, you know, all of these different stages that have good artists. But then they also book some people just to, you know, like there's a little grassy area, we'll put up a mini stage, and you can just sit here and hang out and relax and, you know, enjoy something to eat or something to drink while you're, and listen to somebody local. And so, you know, it is really, you know, Summerfest is a really good time in Milwaukee. I would recommend it to anyone.
Well, I might drag out up to the...
They've changed it. They've changed it so that it's, instead of, like, you know, almost 2 weeks of consecutive music, now they do, I believe it's just a series of weekends.
All right. I'm going to try and maybe drag Odd to the State Fair up there. We always have a great time at that thing. Boy, talk about great food and everything, huh? Of course, she loves looking at all the animals.
Cream puffs in 90 degree heat are always wonderful.
Yeah, but she's always dragging me through the barn just to look at the lambs and everybody and these huge horses. And it's sort of a different sort of Wisconsin for some reason, even though it's a pretty agricultural state. I don't know if anybody's ever been to state fairs, but if you go to the state fair in Minnesota, which I did with John once and Pete and the whole gang, or the one in Illinois or the one in Iowa, the thing is massive. Where you have every like Caterpillar or Case or anybody who makes a tractor literally has like a square block of all their stuff, and you know the farm equipment, and I guess they want people to buy it there and just take it home. I don't know, but the amount of stuff is off the chart. Even though the one in Milwaukee doesn't do that. They've got the animal stuff and all the rest of the stuff and the concerts and the car races and all that stuff, but they must leave the other thing, because northern Wisconsin is, well, that's not really true, but Milwaukee's not really in the middle of the state where all the agriculture stuff is. It's not like there's nothing around there. So they seem to leave that to the Minnesota Fair, Kevin, for some reason. It's always been like that. I mean, I've never seen, a Caterpillar or whatever having, or John Deere having, 50 machineries at the Wisconsin one. But if you go to the one in Illinois or in Minnesota, the whole place is just... But they do have these tents. And if you're... I'll admit it, Kevin, since I've been doing the radio and stuff for a while, your whole personality changes in terms of your observation of things. I mean, you're always looking at what's underlying whatever's there. And I love going, and they have these... Well, they call them tents, but they're not. They're like these big buildings where everything in the world is for sale in there. Because literally, if you come from a farm, you go in there, if you're going to buy your hot tub, you're going to see six brands there. You're going to see 15 different guys selling you, gutter protectors or whatever it happens to be. You don't even think you want it. It slices, it dices every night.
Because it's a gigantic flea market.
Yeah, but there's people, and you watch, President Trump and other people are always talking about it, and they're not wrong on it, about how, some people kind of need to get back to work or whatever. I tell you what, if you see somebody who does a demonstration of Cutco knives or it slices, it dices, 20 times a day for 2 weeks, that son of a bitch is working so hard, Kevin. I mean, those people work so hard in those places. And it's not all air conditioned. And I mean, you see how these people hustle to sell their stuff, and they got 2 weeks to do it. And a lot of the people who have the animals are sleeping, in the barns with their animals, because they don't want anybody near them at night. But it's really a slice of Americana that if you just observe, you'll learn a lot just by looking at it, don't you think?
Well, you can. I've never been one. I'm not too big on the fairs and the zoo, going to the zoo and all that. It doesn't interest me a lot. I always told my kids, get your mother to take you. So it's a little bit lost on me to some degree, but yeah, if you live out where I do, we've got county fairs everywhere, so you can accomplish much the same kind of view of things and get the same exposure on a slightly smaller level. But yeah, the county fairs are really big around here.
Well, we have great.
So I could go 20 minutes to the Cass County Fair. I can go down to the St. Joe County Fair near South Bend, which is on the south end. They have, they have big fairgrounds. It's, it's a 4-H style fair, so you get all, not just the farm people, but the kids raising their animals for competition. All of that. It is that you're right. It's a slice of Americana, and you just kind of lose that in the big city.
Well, Greg Pappas once in a while used to tell us, and I think he's come back on about the different years that farmers have had good years and bad years.
Mm-hmm.
And you could, if you go into these what do you want to call them, Kevin? These buildings where they're selling everything, like the mall, I guess you call it. One year you might see the most outrageous hot tubs. When I say hot tubs, they might have 50, what do you want to call them, 50 spots where water pours into the thing, and they cost like a fortune. You can actually swim laps in the thing, where it'll, you know, the thing, it'll move the water so you can swim in there like you're actually moving.
Yeah.
And they cost thousands of dollars. And all of a sudden, the next year, you won't see any of them. Like, the people who are that go to these places know exactly how good of a year the farm community's had, and they bring stuff commensurate with how it was that year. I mean, it's really amazing how well the economy in America can work. I mean, you're always talking about that, but people really have their finger on the pulse of their clients, usually. And then farm people are their clients. And, it's interesting. Hey, when we come back, Kevin, other than us talking about it the one day, I haven't had a chance to talk to my couple of my gambling buddies in the Tripoli, because one of them had one of his businesses broken into, and he likes to gamble, about whether that makes any difference to him, the fact that you can only take off 90%. My curiosity here is not just somebody going to the track and can only take off 90%. I mean, I really don't give a crap about that. I mean, I guess if I did it, I would. But it's such a huge industry, Kevin, to where people, I think, are part of the bids they're making for these teams is somehow belief that gambling is going to take sports into the next century, and, you know, or the next world or whatever. And for something like that to sneak out of Congress, it just seems odd to me. I mean, it's just something like, how did that get out of there? At the same time, you know, people are paying $10 billion for teams thinking that everybody in the world is going to be gambling on football or basketball. It seems to be kind of a disconnect. But anyway, SP Futures up 5, NASDAQ Futures down 4. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now, right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm talking about Ricky on the board. SP Futures up 4, NASDAQ Futures now down 10. They both were up when we came in. Dow Futures up 55, individual stocks. We've had some earnings. Boeing's up $1.62. Panel's up $1.52. Nothing much going on there. Procter & Gamble down 3. United Healthcare down 3. So nothing crazy. Even in the Magnificent 7, got Met up 270. The rest of them just kind of muted, as they say. Over in Europe, the DAX down 175. It's 0.7%. FTSE down 32.3%. CAC around unchanged. LVMH shares jumped 2.5% after reporting better than feared earnings. I like that. And Texas factory plans over there. I don't really know who LVMH is. I should know, I suppose. Over in Asia, Nikkei down 310. That's 0.9%. Hang Seng down 278. That's 1.1%. Shanghai down 12.3%. Not sure why they're down today, but they are. But they have been up. Bonds unchanged at 4.41. The Bund up 4 basis points, 2.73. That's pretty high for the Bund. I mean, those guys were negative for quite a while, as everybody recalls, I'm sure. Oil is up 22 cents, 66.21. Still cannot get out of its own way in the middle of that 66 number. They've been 65 to 68 ever since that spike. Boy, the guy who sold it at 77 three or four weeks ago, that's one hell of a nice trade. Brent up 21 cents, 69.39. Natural gas up 4 cents, 3.13. Arbob unchanged, 2.11. Gold, which had a huge run-up earlier in the week, is now heading back south. Down 30 today, 33.42. Silver down 29 cents, 38.93. We have foreign exchange. The euro is up, is 1.17, so it's actually a little stronger. Dollar is heading for a weekly drop, they say. The British pound is 1.34, was over 1.35. Crypto, here's a little bit of a story, Kevin. I don't know why this is. Tesla is selling some Bitcoin. So Bitcoin's down $2,500 today at 116.677. Tesla didn't have the world's best earnings and not a very good look going forward for Elon Musk. Ricky, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. Hope They keep saying it's going to get down to 70-something at night. Every time I get in a car, it's 84 in the morning.
Good morning, Chief. It's currently 6:34 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. Right now, it says, Chief, I'm not going to promise you nothing, but it says in the website right here that we have 76 degrees right now with a high of 79. Mostly cloudy and humid with a couple of showers and a possible heavy thunderstorm today. The forecast remains for tonight, as well as a flash flood warning, so watch out for that. Low, the temperature tonight was going to be 73. Phoenix, Arizona, 80 degrees right now with a high of 109. Very warm with plenty of sunshine. Tonight will be clear with a low of 80 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, Emma Kennedy from Monroe's. We're looking at 17 minutes. Looking at about 31 minutes, Emma Edens from Lane Cook. Eisenhower from Wolf, 19 minutes. 14 minutes, then Ryan from 95th. And Stevenson from 24 to the Den Ryan, 18 minutes. Lastly, let's talk about sports. Diamondbacks at Pirates today at 5:40 p.m. And Chicago's got a pretty special game, Northside versus Southside. We have Cubs at White Sox at 6:40 p.m. Winner gets the Pope. Back over to you, Chief.
These games are almost all sold out, Kevin. Sox and Cubs at Sox Park.
Well, the Sox are getting a little more interest, and the Cubs have a lot of interest, so I'm not surprised.
Yeah, I was... talking to some dudes last night, you know, talk about being able to organize things. I was asking my buddy Kendall, who's a big Sox fan, how exactly you go from having a place staffed, when I say staffed, hot dog stands, beer spots, and vendors, how do you go from 8,000 people one night to 40 over the weekend? Where do you get everybody? I mean, how can you have that many people on call that you haven't called them all year or haven't gotten something else to do? I mean, it's got to be an interesting study in logistics, which would be right up your alley, by the way.
Yeah, it would be a challenge. I would just call up all the people who work at the Cubs, you know, at Wrigley Field.
Well, you know, that's probably that's what Kendall was saying, that they'll find some people who work maybe at the stadium and those kinds of places, and you know, a lot of people are all just on call, and if you call them, they're usually willing to work a night or two. But you wonder, you know, you're getting your deliveries on beer, and you're getting, you know, 100 cases, and all of a sudden the next night you want 1,000. I mean, I guess all that's, you know, these guys are good at that. That's what they do. But it's always kind of fascinating.
I didn't know this game was coming, and so they've had a long time to plan for it, and they know the Cubs are a draw at this point. So I'm not. They should be prepared. There's really no reason not to be.
The team is playing certainly enough better. Matter of fact, I was almost willing to make somebody a bet that they almost went go 500 or close to it now at the end of the year. But because all of a sudden,
I wouldn't be that wide eyed about it.
Yeah, well, they get there's a thing that happens sometimes.
They're going to unload some good players, you know.
Well, who are they going to unload? Next week or two. They're going to try and unload a center fielder. Who else they got?
Oh, they got a pitcher.
You think they're getting to the point now where they're getting enough better to where, even though you become sellers, at some point you got to keep people because next year might look better. I mean,
but Hauser's on a 1-year deal, so he's, you know, he's on the open market after this year, and I think Tauchman is too. So those are important guys to this year's, to any success they would have this year, and I think, you know, they just have to keep building. I would think they're gone. And of course, Luis Robert will be gone if they can get anything for him. I think they'd be really hard pressed to get to 500.
Well, they haven't. They have not. This is my experience with the Cubs. That's why you won't see me in another Cub game. They have not given anybody like a discount on these tickets while they've sucked. How can I say it more self-side? So, yeah, you're paying full bore, and you're paying for the game that night. I mean, there's a huge, well, I'm not accusing you of this. There's a huge difference in this world between all the, how can I say this nicely? I can't. All the idiots that only are experts at sports and never go to a game, but know everything all about it, and they're talking about, oh yeah, you got to get rid of this guy, get rid of that guy, plan for the future. There's a big difference between that and somebody actually goes to the game. I mean, I must have read 15 articles by morons that they somehow give, you know, the time of day to, about how the Bulls absolutely were idiots by not tanking purposely the last 20 games. And I'm sitting there going, okay, what if I'm the mope that paid $250 for that seat? Do I want to go watch some guys purposely tank? I'm going to watch a basketball, an NBA basketball game. It's supposed to be a good game. I mean, somehow they don't... There's a disconnect between the armchair general managers of the world and people who actually like the game, I think, Kevin. I was in a situation with my Cubs season tickets on probably three separate years where they kind of sucked. All of a sudden, they started to play a lot better. And all of a sudden, everybody's gone. I couldn't give a ticket away for 5 months or 4 months. And I'm sitting there going, not only do I not want to go, I can't give it away. And oh, by the way, they didn't call me up and said, because we did that and got rid of all these salaries. 1 year, I got to believe, Kevin, their salary at the end of the year could have been $40 million. They didn't call me up and said, we're giving you a $10 rebate on all those tickets you have. I mean, you just get a different feeling of it when you're on the other side of it. Just saying. Whether right or wrong, you know, who knows.
Yeah, no, I get it. And, you know, that's one of the challenges of being a general manager of a sports franchise in this era. Because you do have to, you know, if your team's not in contention, you do have to look down the road and say, how do I get it back to in contention? And at the same, and so unloading some of the players, getting better prospects, taking it, you know, it's kind of the, can I sell high, you know, that kind of situation. And especially when you have guys with expiring contracts, there's some guys out there that, you know, that if you read the trade talk stuff about it, who have two or three controllable years, they're going to be looking for a huge haul, you know, those teams. If they're gonna trade off a guy, so it's one thing to trade a guy who's got, you know, 3 months left on his contract, and see if you can get, you know, see if you can get Pete Crow Armstrong as a prospect for a couple months of Javier Baez with the Mets. You know, that's one thing, and that's, you know, those kinds of deals happen, but they take many years to come true, which is exactly what happened with Crow Armstrong.
Yeah, and how many Pete Crow Armstrongs come along in a generation? Three?
Well, yeah, and he is, you know, I still have my concerns about him unless he, you know, gains command of the strike zone at the plate. He is at risk of having a lot of unrealized potential as an offensive player, and still he's really, really good, obviously, but you know, how much, you know, can he be better? And I think if he doesn't swing at every damn thing that comes in front of him, that he can be better. Especially when, you know, he's up with nobody on base. Because for him, a walk at this point in his career, anyway, a walk is like a double. So, you know,
so is a bunt.
For the downs out of the strike zone when you can take the base on balls and wind up on second.
But lest we forget Andrew Jones from the Braves, who was a terrific center fielder and hit 220 most of his career, but because he was such a great center field, Pete Crow Armstrong
was probably a little higher than that. But yeah,
in his later years, he didn't. But I mean, I don't think he was as good in center field as Pete Crow Armstrong. So
no, correct. Pete Crow Armstrong is one of the best center fielders I've seen.
I think he's one of the best.
He'll always have that. He will always have that. But you know, I hate to see potential squandered.
Oh, I do too.
And plate discipline is a big part of that. So that's all I'm saying about him. I'm not really denigrating him. He's obviously a very, very good ball player, an important part of the Cubs' success.
Well, you know, with the armchair general managers, and I'm trying not to be one, with people who don't, and I know this is the horrible part of my personality, I deal with money all day long. When you get a team that's payroll is, let's say, $100 million, and they price idiots like me accordingly, and all of a sudden halfway through the year it becomes $50 million, I got a problem with it. I always have, and that's why I don't have tickets anymore. I mean, there needs to be, you don't sell Pavarotti at the opera and charge me $200 and show up and say, we traded him for Kevin O'Neill. By the way, he doesn't sound quite as good, but it's still $200. I'm not giving your money back. I mean, other venues, other entertainment things don't pull that off, Kevin, but baseball does all the time. It's pretty bizarre, isn't it?
Yeah, well, and sports in general do that all the time, yeah. So, you know, as you look at it, though, you know, teams have their big prospects. I'm sure everybody who, you know, is thinking of dealing with the Cubs has their eye on Owen Casey, who is their best and closest to major league ready prospect, and he's the yield from trading Yu Darvish several years ago. So Casey came through South Bend. You know, they got him as a
An outfielder?
Yeah, he's an outfielder. He's a right fielder. He's their insurance policy if they can't sign Kyle Tucker.
I thought Alcantara was right up there too. He's not as good.
Alcantara is also highly regarded, but not as highly regarded as Casey. Casey's a power hitter. He's got a lot of home runs. If they are not able to re-sign Kyle Tucker, then you know Casey's their guy. If they trade him, then that gives them a lot more urgency to pay whatever it takes to get Tucker, and that's going to be really expensive because Tucker is one of the best players in Major League Baseball.
Well, I think I'm surprised, Kevin. I keep using the term the armchair quarterbacks. I'm surprised there isn't more of a. I know if it was me, you're one play away from. I mean, I was there today. What's his name? The center fielder landed on first base and tore up his knee. I was there today. He chopped Choi, whacked his head on the ground. They had the ambulance, and he was never any kind of a player after that. I'm surprised that the current team doesn't have more of a discount than going to arbitration and doesn't take advantage of it more often. I mean, we're talking about a lot of dough. So
well, yeah, except that Tucker's not arbitration eligible. He's going to be a free agent.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. He's got 40 more games to play. If they make the playoffs, he could have 55 games. He any day could be his last day. What I'm saying is, I would think that if it was me doing the negotiation, and I'm the Cubs, and I really wanted him, I would say, look, how about we extend this or wherever, something new, for 3 years at this amount of dough, even if it's not five or six, and I'll start paying you more money like today. I mean, I'm saying that the discount, the advantage the current team has, seems to me to be bigger than it normally plays out to be. I guess what I'm trying to say.
I hear what you're saying. Is an extension is security, and you know we saw that. We saw that with the Bulls, with Jordan, with Pippen. You know, where they signed extensions, but then they regretted it because later on the market for them was would have been so much higher, and they were constantly bitching about being underpaid. Jordan less so. I think I think Jordan kept a lot of it to himself, and he had so many outside earning opportunities anyway that it didn't matter that much. But when they got to the end of Jordan's time and he was on one-year deals, then they were paying him. They were paying him, $30 million a year, way over the cap, because in those at that time you could go over the cap to sign your own free agents. So, but Pippen never got to that point, and they finally did a sign and trade with him at the end of his career. But he signed the long-term deal because he had back surgery and he wanted the security. And then when it turned out that he had longevity and the market was paying higher, Reinsdorf was saying, well, we got a contract. player.
Well, that was absurd on his part, because there are times when the market just changes and nobody anticipated. And I'm really surprised, Kevin, that people don't have more of that in their contracts. I mean, the first example, I don't know how many people even remember, but Magic Johnson, after a couple of years in the league, he signed a contract for, $1 million a year for 25 years?
Something like that, yeah.
And everybody thought, oh, my God, what's wrong with the Lakers? They're out of their minds. Well, in that period of time, whatever year that was, we had an inflationary bulge. In society, it had nothing to do with the Lakers or Magic Johnson.
Good name for a rock band, by the way,
yeah.
Inflationary bulge.
But and all of a sudden, he's arguably the second or third or top three player in a game, and there's got to be 40 guys making more than $50 million. Well, within two or three years, it was obvious that...
Even discounted it, over 25 years, which he wasn't going to play.
Yeah, but even at that level, you just sit
Bobby
there and go...
Bobby Bonilla type of thing.
Well, Bobby Bonilla was a... we went through that.
The circumstances were different, but it was the same thing. He's getting an annuity for life, so...
Well, but he also didn't get paid for 10 years.
Yeah.
I actually went through the math. Were you on the show today, Kevin? I went through the math.
Yeah, I was. We don't need to rehash it. Well, it's okay.
But the bottom line is, at a 9.5% return, the owner was a winner. And he didn't get 9.5, and he lost the dough. So that's. But I mean, if he'd have gotten 7%, it wouldn't have been the worst deal. But I'm sure Bernie Madoff promised him 25 and took his dough. So that I don't think he expected that. I mean,
probably not.
You know, I do have a question on that, Kevin, and I don't even know who to ask. If the contract, well, this is with the old ownership of the Mets, right? Then he went somewhere else. Then he went back to the Mets, and the contract sort of followed him back to the Mets, and the current Met owner is the guy who's paying him, right? Now, my question, and I have no idea how I get an answer to this, is if he, the old owner, who gave his money to Bernie Madoff, from what I understand across the board, and I also have heard it's very uneven, most of the people got half of their money back. So if the original owner actually got half his dough back, I guess he just kept it, eh? Because the contract went on with the corporation or whatever, and the deal with Madoff might have been him personally or something. But so the new owner is really sort of getting screwed, because I think the old owner got half his dough back.
Yep. But it's not like he didn't know. It's not like he didn't do his diligence when he bought the team. He knew what the liability was.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, in this day and age.
It would have been built into the price, presumably, like any other normal human being would do, and he'd be okay. Now, you say you're surprised more players don't have that. Well, they have things now, you know, they have player options. They do a lot more, opt-outs. You get all of those kinds of things nowadays that you didn't, you know, that weren't there when Pippen was playing.
Well, remember,
you see that now. It's, you know, it's opt-outs, team options, or a buyout, and then player option. You know, those all exist.
Well, I remember when Greg Maddux was on the Cubs.
So, for instance, one of the guys you hear them, you hear discussions around a trade deadline deal, is Lugo, the pitcher on the Kansas City Royals. He's under contract till next year, but he can opt out. So essentially, you don't know what you're going to get. If you get him and he gets injured, he'll probably stay under contract for next year and get paid pretty well. He's in his 30s. This is his last chance to get a big deal. And so if he helps a team succeed and go deep into the playoffs, if he helps a team even make the playoffs, let alone if he helps a team win the World Series, he's going to have a lot of value on a 2 or 3 year deal, and he probably will opt out. So you don't know when you make the deal for him. You don't know if you're trading for a 3 month rental or you're trading for a year and a half. You know, next year as well.
And all I'm saying is he's going to, if he's in a team that's going to go deep in the playoffs, he's going to pitch a hell of a lot of competitive innings, and if he hurts his arm, he never gets another paycheck. Where if somebody...
If he hurts his arm, then he'll get a paycheck next year because he's still under contract for next year.
But, I mean, when the Cubs lost Greg Maddux, right, they didn't sign him, we had the tickets. So we'd always go to one of the last games, so J.D. and I go to the game. And there, Maddux is on first base. He got a hit. Somebody hits a ground ball, and Maddux flies into second base as hard as you can find, trying to break up the double play when you can do that, right? So the next guy up is the guy who hit the ball was, remember him, Elzron, or whatever his name was. They used to play him at third and first. I never thought he was very good. What the hell is his name? The Cubs, they love the guy. He was always in some spot, someplace, and I think he always kind of sucked. But all of a sudden, the guy hits the ground ball behind him, and the guy does the big right turn out the right field. J.D. goes, what's wrong with this picture? This guy, his last paycheck is next week, and he's trying to break up the double play. The other idiot's running out the right field, and he's on contract. it's obvious that Greg Maddux, I mean, if you're Greg Maddux's agent, you sit there, and your heart had to be in your head, right, when you see him do that. I mean, why yeah. There's more to this than meets the eye. I mean, right?
Well, yeah, because, players will make business decisions when they're in the middle, in game. They just do. And that is a business decision to say, I'm going to slide, or I'm not going to slide. And so it's not a good business decision to slide, but it's a decision that Greg Maddux would make because he's Greg Maddux and he's a hell of a competitor. I hear what you're saying, but in Lugo's case, he's got the security for next year if he wants it. So it's not really an issue for him, other than to say, he's good to go, basically. He can throw the extra innings, he can burn out his arm, he's going to get paid whatever the contract says for next year. I don't know if that's $15 million, $18 million, whatever it is, he's going to get paid that much next year. His only decision is, if he gets to the end of the year and all's well and he's successful, do I want to go out on the open market and see if I can get more, and if I can get more years? In his case, it probably matters more that he get extra years, because if he waits until the end of next year to go back out on the open market, he's probably not going to see as many years.
Well, Kevin, as you can probably tell, I'm fishing for like a value, and it's really hard to do because a lot of teams put different values on the players, especially in this free agent market, because it's so crazy. There's only a few people out there. But in general, you would think that if everybody knew that Kevin O'Neill was worth $5 million a year for 4 years, of course, like I said, it's never that obvious, and I'm the Cubs and you're playing for me, I should be able to say, hey, Kevin, why don't I do it for 4.7, but I'll start it today and I'll start the guarantee today. There has to be a number there that makes sense for both sides. Now, I'm not saying the Cubs want...
Yeah, and yet so few people and this may be agent influence, and it may be agent influence in the agent's best interest, not the players, but so few people will take the discount. We'll take the discounted amount. We'll do the extension. They all, for the most part, they seem to want to get to free agency.
Well, I don't think if it's if your value is worth five, you should take two as a discount. But
if you're a guy in his first contract, he definitely wants to get to free agency.
Yeah, I'm just fishing for the value. I mean, there's no way that if your value is five, that I can offer you two just because I'm going to pay you for 2 months, but. What's the number? Is it 4.5, 4.6? Somewhere in there has to be something that makes sense, you would think.
Yeah, well, and I have read, anyway, that the Cubs have approached Tucker about doing a deal now. I don't know if they've been completely rebuffed or if they've just never gotten close. They also did the same thing with Crow Armstrong, who, in his case, isn't even eligible for free agency or even arbitration yet, and won't be for a while. But if the Cubs can lock him up past the 6 years that you need to get to free agency, if they can lock him up for eight or nine.
Well, I mean, it also comes down to, as much as people get in love with these players, the problem with the free agency is it's so discreet. I mean, if Tucker is worth, in today's world, somebody's going to sign him for $20 million. Let's pick a number. I mean, it could be that high. $20 million, and the Cubs go, okay, now you've got, like you say, Casey is your insurance policy. Next year he's 10 home runs and 2 hits a week, whatever. He's 10 home runs and he's 30 hits. Worse than Tucker. There's some number there that you can put in there. Now, okay, and he's going to be making $1.5 million. All right, so there's $18.5 million that I have to spend to get probably a little better defense. Can I sprinkle that $18.5 million around and get my 30 hits and 10 home runs somewhere else? And I'm going to say, Kevin, absolutely yes. I mean, you can't do that with every player, but.
That's the Moneyball equation.
How can it be anything else?
Who was the first baseman on the A's that was so good that they eventually lost to free agency? What was his last name?
I know what you're talking about.
Can't remember, but he was MVP caliber for a few years there. And yeah, they decided, okay, if we can't sign him, we may have to replace him by upgrading a little bit at second base and getting a solid first baseman to replace him, who's not going to put up the same numbers. Yeah, that's the theory, and there's ways you can do that. I would think, if you were to ask the Cubs what the perfect scenario is, they would come out and announce that they signed a multi-year deal with Kyle Tucker, and now they can use Owen Casey to get whoever they need to make the pennant push this year, and maybe to get one of those guys, and he would just be a piece of it. He wouldn't even be the sole guy. But they could use him then to get that pitcher that has two more controllable years and is going to be in their starting rotation for the next few years.
I actually read something.
That would be your perfect world, but I don't know that they're going to get that out of Kyle Tucker. So they may be a little gun shy about who they're willing to trade, because of who they might not be willing to trade. They may be a little bit gun shy, because remember, they can also sign Kyle Tucker in the offseason and still make a deal for a guy who's otherwise going to be blocked, like Casey. Yeah.
Well,
it's not like their last chance. It's just, they want to make the pennant push now. They want to make, they want to take their shot now. It's going to cost them, and they're not the only ones. There's lots of people it's going to cost, and sometimes there's some of those trades that will come back and just bite you in the butt.
Well, Detroit was a seller.
The most notorious in this town is James Shields. The White Sox several years back traded James Shields, or traded to get James Shields, who was known as Big Game James, right? And he never did much for the White Sox. But boy, they traded Fernando Tatis for him to San Diego as a Class A ball player, and now that Tatis is one of the best ball players in baseball.
Well, I don't think I talked about it with you. It was a long time ago, but it might have been Roger Clemens' last hurrah. But he's still pretty good, his last year, and he was on a team that it was kind of obvious he was going to retire, but he was still pretty damn good. Maybe he's going to another year or something. But anyway, there were about four teams in the American League that were in a serious hunt for not only division championship but the wild card. And so they're all looking for, an extra pitcher. And whoever wrote the article, he must have gone to an economics class someplace. It was fascinating, Kevin. We talked about how much Clements was worth to the various teams. And his, his cost for the 2 months of the season, was serious. It was like $4 million or some, $3 million or some big number. And so they talked about, the Red Sox. Ricky Garcia is the fifth pitcher on the Red Sox, and he's like pretty damn good. He's got to have five starts left, and you expect him to win at least two, maybe three. He's not some schlum. And so if you put Clements in that spot, if on your best day he wins four, he's maybe worth a game to you. Now you can put Ricky back in the bullpen; you might get something there, that kind of crap. But he's like worth a game to you. But then they talked about it was the other team was like the Yankees or Baltimore. Well, the fifth starter was a bag of balls. Maybe he goes 1-4. So you can assume that Clements on that team is worth probably two, maybe three wins to you. And how much more he was worth for that team than he was Boston. Then they went to the third and the fourth team. And it came down to one team, you're probably not even going to get another game. Maybe you might get one. So you're paying $5 million for one game. The other team's paying the same $5 million for maybe three or four games. How much more he was worth to them than was it Boston? And unless you see anybody actually go through it, you never think of things that way, right? Now, obviously, if your bullpen sucked and you could take your fifth guy and put him back in the bullpen, you might have gained something there. But leaving all that aside, in just terms of how many games the person's worth it to you, he might not be worth it for anybody if your fifth starter's pretty good, right?
No, probably not. So anyway, just to wrap it up, because I know it's time for you to go to Carl and it's time for me to head to the office. As you look, though, and you sort of look at the Cubs right now, as you rate their prospects, because they have some of their highest rated prospects for the like a Cade Horton or the third baseman that they're in the majors now, so they're off the list. So Casey's their top rated. But there's some other guys here, and Alcantara is actually their number four rated prospect. There's a guy Carl knows from his days playing in Tennessee, Moises Ballesteros. And he was up with the Cubs for a week or so.
He's pretty much a DH, right?
Yeah, he's a catcher first baseman, which means a DH.
Yeah.
And they also have a second baseman named Jefferson Rojas, who is at AA right now. And then you get Alcantara, and Jackson Wiggins is a right-handed pitcher who's kind of been on a fast rise. He's also at AA and playing in Tennessee. And so you start to get to that level of guys, and those are the guys they would probably be more likely to trade. I think they like, you know, the bat for Ballesteros, but they like Suzuki as well, so as their DH, so they're not in a big hurry to get him there. I don't remember how long Suzuki's contract runs.
Well, if Tucker leaves, he's your right fielder.
What's that?
If Tucker leaves, he's your right fielder, Suzuki.
No, it's probably Casey.
All right.
It's probably Casey, because you know, Suzuki's just not that good an outfielder.
Well, he didn't have to be that good with the guy in center field.
I understand, but you don't get to drop balls.
True.
You know, that's a problem. So, you know, a guy like Ballesteros, there's always people who will say, I'll take a good young bat and figure out how to use him. And when you're looking at a second base / shortstop, well, you got Swanson under contract for a while, and you don't have a foreseeable need at second base either. So even though these guys are highly rated, and you may get 5 or 6 years down the road and say, boy, I wish I had that guy now, those are the guys that they're most likely to trade. Alcantara in the outfield, same thing. You know, and maybe Alcantara is their right fielder if they trade Casey and they don't sign Tucker. But you know, that's part of what they have to balance. That's part of the challenge of being a general manager right now. Is, you know, I can't completely sell out the future to try and win this year, but I know I'm going to have to sell some of it.
Who's a big stud in South Bend? Is there a star there?
Good question. We need my buddy Joe Casey to chime in on that one. Let's see if they have anybody listed. Probably the highest rated guy I see on here is their number 11, and these guys will climb after they, you know, play in the minors for a while. But they have a shortstop second base named Christian Hernandez that is there. And then as I look at other Class A's, well, the lower A, Cole Mathis and Angel Cepeda. So, yeah, and then they got, you know, they have some highly rated guys in the rookie level and that they've drafted recently. So, yeah, most of their best prospects right now are AAA and AA.
So the rest of the guys are just there to play to fill out the team for the rest of those few guys, pretty much.
Well, pretty much, yeah. And you get your occasional surprise.
All right, bud. Have a good time at work. Teach them well. Do we have a? I'm sure we have Carl on the line. Do we?
Yes, we do.
How you doing, bud? How are you?
You know, it's it's another interesting day, shall we say?
Every day is an interesting day these days.
Yeah, you know. One of the things that I thought was rather fascinating was that, Elon, in his crazy views of so many different things, we're going to Mars, we're doing this, we're doing that. Electric cars, they all make sense. So we just shove all those externalities, like recycling the batteries off on somebody else.
That's why they're called externalities, Carl.
Well, you know, we don't care about poisoning the water supply, which is why we use solar panels, because they're non-recyclable, and the glass is made with typically either arsenic or cadmium, neither of which you want in your water supply. All this kind of stuff. But yesterday, they took a several-hour global Starlink outage. Now, they haven't said why that happened, okay? but that's it's a little different situation. Internet outages are kind of an interesting thing, because usually when an ISP does something stupid, which they occasionally do, it hits them, right? But very rarely does it go beyond that level of trouble. the thing about a satellite-based service like this is, of course, if it has something to do with the command and control sphere of the, you know, the cluster, it gets everyone at once, and it did. So,
well, how does somebody, unless they have you and you're kind of fishing around for the cause here? I mean, yesterday, I don't know if you noticed, but I think it was yesterday, Microsoft had their issue with 2 days ago, a bunch of, you know, something got hacked or whatever, and the stock is down like 350 or something yesterday. Now today, there's, and I'm not saying they're wrong, boy, because they've done well for a long time. There's people that are just by the dippers, and now the stock's up $2. And I'll bet you that not one of the person buying could give you a clue as to what actually happened. Did it hurt them? Not hurt them? They don't care. I mean, so how does something, the Microsoft thing? How would anybody, even you, know? Was that a wound that sticks to Microsoft, or it's a thing that a week from now everybody's going to forget about it? Or same thing with the Starlink?
Well, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I've I have some serious issues with the entire premise on Starlink to begin with, because this goes back to my days of running an internet company in Chicago. I smelled the cable company invasion, if you will, coming. That might have had something to do with the fact that I did some of the study work on economic feasibility of that way of getting internet to people long before it actually showed up.
Yeah, well,
and you know, I mean, hey, it's not like having a little inside baseball doesn't help you kind of figure out which way things might head, right? I mean, you're not always right, but you know, when somebody's studying something, they're doing it for a reason. And so one of the things that I put some brain power into the design on was a box that basically, the idea being, you as a customer would buy one of these things and stick it near a window, and it would establish a mesh link over what at the time was nascent Wi-Fi. You know, when it first started, it was all 2 gigahertz and it was slow, and but it worked, right? And most people that had, I mean, I had one of the early cards that went in a laptop, but it wasn't built into the laptop. It was a PCMCIA card you had to shove in the slot. And so the idea was that this thing, you know, stick this in your window, you buy the hardware, it establishes the connectivity to other places, and then as an internet company, you stick gateways in strategic places around a city that actually have ties back to the higher speed wired infrastructure. All right, so essentially this is a terrestrial version of what Musk actually built. The problem, and the reason I didn't go ahead and build this thing and deploy it, is that it didn't pencil due to the requirements, the processing requirements, the memory requirements, and at the time to buy that hardware and actually, you know, have it manufactured and put it out there was prohibitively expensive. All right, so
who would have even made it if you could buy it from them?
Well, I would have had to design it and have somebody build it under contract for me. Okay.
I mean, who would the somebodies have been, I guess, is my question.
There were plenty of contract manufacturers for electronics at the time. That was not hard. The problem was I couldn't come up with a way that I could sell the box for, say, $100 to you as the average mope, right? And a $20 a month subscription to have the access. I couldn't build it at a price where it penciled. I mean,
so it would have been $200 and $30 a month, and nobody would pay that,
and nobody would buy, right? So I mean, yeah, that was the thing, was that I, you know, what I was looking for was it had to be faster, better, cheaper, right? I mean, that's the idea when you're innovating in business. You want to hit all three, but you have to hit two, and I just it didn't pencil. I actually, somewhere around on my network, I know where it is. I have the actual router code that would have run on the box. And I mean, it was unfinished because never got enough, you know, examples of something that would, you know, be able to do that. So, I mean, I'm sure that, you know, it was full of bugs and unusable in its present state. But I spent quite a bit of brain power on that. And it just came to the conclusion that it was, you know, at the time. Now today, the memory and the computing power to do that is not really all that tough. Okay, I mean, today it's real cheap. I mean, you're walking around with a you know, poor.
Well, how does this, how does this Starlink work? I mean, boy, what's the difference between that and a Hughes satellite?
Oh well, enormous.
Well, no, I'm saying what is the?
All right, so the first thing is that Hughes is geostationary. All right, so your dish on the roof for Hughes is aimed and points at one thing. All right.
So it's like a dish or direct TV thing.
It's like a direct TV thing. All right. Essentially, because the satellite is in a geostationary orbit. Now, there's a bunch of problems with that. One of them is that there's only 360 degrees of rotation around the Earth. If you have half or quarter degree spacing, there's a limited number of slots. Therefore, you can't keep putting up more and more satellites because there just aren't any more holes. And the other problem you have is that there is a very significant propagation delay because geostationary orbit's about 22,000 miles out, and the signal has to go up and back. All right.
So that's why if you're watching a Cub game in one of the skyboxes, it's about 10 seconds late.
Well, part of that's because they put an intentional delay in there, but there is a very significant delay. Okay, the same thing when I used to do hits out of Pensacola for CNBC and all those other guys, the back channel feed that I had in my ear was over terrestrial phone lines for the audio, because if you tried to take that over the satellite, it was the delay was such that you'd get ridiculously out of synchronization with who you're talking to, right? I mean, it'd be unusable. So that's part of the problem. This creates huge issues for any kind of interactive use. So you can't play a video, you can't play a video game basically on a computer that's connected via that system, and it's because the delay, you're dead before you even see the other guy.
I hate it when that happens.
You didn't even see the guy, and then who shot you, and then 3/4 of a second later you're dead. But the other thing is that because Elon's stuff, because Starlink, and now Bezos has a competing cluster that they're putting up. I think there's a couple of others, but that's in low Earth orbit. And the other thing that he's done is essentially what the kind of thing I was trying to do, but on a terrestrial basis. However, he has an advantage being in space, is that he can use lasers between the satellites, which have much higher bandwidth than RF. And because they're in space, the combination.
Well, how far are these things apart when they get up there?
Well, their orbits are very tightly placed, but they're quite it's called space for a reason, Chief.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, if you sat up there in that orbital plane, you'd probably eventually get hit by one at 18,000 miles an hour, and there'd be a lot of pieces. But it would take a while before it happened. I mean, it's not the kind of thing where, like, when you see the launches, you see like the chain of them coming out of the thing as it deploys, right, coming out of the rocket. But then they fire their thrusters to actually get into that orbital plane, and you can see them. It's one of the
I've seen them. It's pretty interesting.
Oh yeah, one of the things that really pisses me off is that they trash astronomical photography, because there's always going to be a streak of some of them going through your frame when you're doing long exposures. There's enough of them out there that's just the way it is. But this also means that the issue of, okay, I got congestion here, how do I get the signal down to the Earth? Well, I can beam it over to closer to where it has to come down using a laser. This requires that the routing be a little more complex, but it's not an unsolvable problem. And really the only difference between what he's doing and what I was planning to do is that the route calculation is done in three dimensions instead of in two, because obviously on the Earth it's in two dimensions, right? It isn't really flat, but it, for all intents and purposes, is. Whereas in space, that is absolutely not true, because it's a spherical thing with a rock in the middle that blocks you from going through it. So, but something went wrong with the command and control of this. This cluster yesterday, and all of a sudden out of the middle of nowhere the entire thing goes dark for a couple hours, I think they were out, which I thought was kind of interesting.
I was supposed to be a guest on a radio show yesterday, and a storm came through and lightning hit the tower. There was no radio show.
Well, you know, that happens too. It's you know, but yeah. So Microsoft is a very interesting thing because there's a story in the news that just came out a few days ago that, you know, they got the DoD contract, right, for a lot of their stuff, their so-called cloud stuff. They've been using tech support people and others that are Chinese in China. Okay.
That's unreal.
Now they supposedly have secured this by having a minder that basically watches, you know, this guy. The problem is that guy doesn't have the chops to know if the person that he's supposedly supervising is doing something he ain't supposed to be doing. He doesn't have the technical chops, because otherwise, why wouldn't you just hire him and have him do the support job in the first place? All right. So this is, but, you know, and everybody was after, you know, oh, this is Microsoft. Well, actually, it's not Microsoft's fault. The government wrote the contract in a way that allowed this to happen. Okay. It's the government's fault. It's not Microsoft's fault.
Carl, we've talked for, 12, 15 years we've been on the show, and I agree with everything you're saying, by the way, but this whole concept of China, enemy, friend, oh, by the way, we like to sell them crap, I don't think I've ever seen anything quite so complex from an Oval Office point of view as an ongoing problem for a president, whoever he happened to be, as this. I mean, it's very akin to what might have happened if Hitler would have realized he was 5 years early and going to war and would have waited 5 years. We'd have been so in Dutch with that guy. Some people would have been. It would have been disgusting to try and peel out of it.
Oh, and you know, I mean, I have long argued that there are things that are so inherently unacceptable about the, you know, the situation with China and everything else. I think they've crossed the Rubicon to the point that an embargo is the correct action. And, you know, I mean, that's, of course, oh my God, does that bring out people? Oh, yo, you can't be serious about that. That would ruin us. Well, you know what? The disruption would be very significant over the short term. But sometimes, just because, you know, Chief, it's like so much else that's gone on within the political sphere. Okay, you and I have sparred back and forth about the thing with the DACA people and all the people that you know, that Biden let in, and you know, and all of this, right? And the same thing with, you know, with the medical care, with Obamacare and everything else. And the argument is always, if I can screw you to a significant degree and hand a benefit to a large enough number of people, politically it becomes impossible to reverse. Okay, and it has nothing to do with whether or not it should have ever happened in the first place anymore.
I can't ever really do this, but I will. You are spot on, my friend.
But that's the thing, is it goes...
By the way, Ricky, note that.
By the way, and they do this. This is the essence. I mean, all the stuff that went on with Obama and Obamacare and everything else, the entire point of this was not actually to solve the problem. The entire point was to create such a large class of people that would get it in the chute if anything ever happened to it.
That
politically it's impossible.
I think,
well, guess what?
We can argue about that, but I have a buddy, Carl, who once in a while, I mean, he's a pretty bright guy, and he said, when this stuff starts to happen, like, be it Musk with the tax credit,
right,
everything you're talking about, you know, be it healthcare, be it China trade, be whatever it is, my buddy said, you know, you reach the point where they actually think they deserve it.
Right.
He goes, once you get there, you got a problem. Whatever it is, you know, the money managers that have gotten the capital gains treatment on stuff that they never had any money at risk, they actually think they deserve it. Because once you get to that point, you got a problem. the first few years, they know they're screwing you and they're waiting for it to be turned around. But after a while, they go, I actually deserve it.
I actually deserve this. Well, yeah, and we have headed for our in our direction is a 900-pound gorilla that's going to smash all the China in the shop, and that is that Biden did this with his rescue thing, one of the COVID era things. They changed the formula. And I wrote an article about this when Obamacare first came in, and I said, look, I'm essentially going to stop doing any kind of entrepreneurial anything and change my lifestyle so that I am okay, not living richy rich, but I'm okay at an income level before the subsidy cliff. And the reason I did that...
But then they screwed that up with the inflation's buried. Everybody thought that way.
Well, yes and no. I mean, as it turns out, it kind of, sort of. All right. But then, during the COVID crazy stuff, one of the things that was in the Biden administration legislation was a modification that basically said that it's 6% or 8%, irrespective of the cliff, what you pay, your out-of-pocket for this worthless insurance, such as it is, cannot exceed that percentage of your AGI, okay? And if it does, then you qualify for the subsidy anyway, even though under the original law, it would go away. Problem is, that's not permanent, and it expires at the end of this year.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's inflation. I mean, I think nobody knows more about where this goes than I do, and it goes everywhere. But just when you can't, I'm always a guy, Crowley. I usually, it's not the right term. I value you because you go into the complexities of stuff that maybe I don't understand as much. But I think I'm pretty good at bringing things down to the simplest. And if you can't answer the simplest question on a policy, then everything you do on top of that is a joke. I mean, as Jack Callahan used to say, we don't know where we're going, but we're well on our way. once you reach that point, but I always use the example, and this is, you know, so simpleton. I mean, you and I are the two-headed monster 20 years ago, 25 years ago in the Oval Office, and Bill Gates, before he got hooked up with Epstein and got divorced, comes running and goes, hey, these bastards in China, I've sold 10 things of software.
Yeah, I sold 10 in every single computer.
Yeah, they got a billion computers over there. Yeah. I think they're screwing me. And all of a sudden, you and I sit there and go, okay, well, we got to do something about this. And the next guy runs in is Coke. And he goes, wait a minute. There's a billion guys over there and 750 million of them are drinking a Coke a day. These guys are the best things since sliced bread. And all of a sudden, after our first 20 minutes in office, we look at each other and go, why do we want this job?
Well, I mean, so here's another one. So, you know, I mean, and this just came out of Trump's mouth, which made me want to throw up, is that, you know, he just signed this EO regarding AI, okay? And one of the
things... Is this the thing with the NVIDIA chips?
Well, no, not really. This doesn't have to do with these chips that now can, you know, allegedly be sold back into China. They were banned off, and I mean, those aren't the really fast ones. It was like the supposedly decontented ones on purpose.
Well, but how much? Our idea. When I say this, I'm saying this to the expert. Somebody's idea in Washington of being able to let them sell something just under, you know, the rate that gets you in the Indy 500 might not be the Chinese view of that, and they might be able to use it for something better than that, and they might be able to adapt it. I mean, how do we know? You think NVIDIA is anxious to sell something just below or just above?
Well, yeah, exactly. But, you know, the other thing, too, is that at this point, China's kind of, I mean, the NVIDIA thing in China is going to get real interesting, because Huawei has been, of course, spending their time building their own chips. Okay.
Now, first of all, when you say chips to every man, you look at the little tiny thing you got to, on the end of your finger, you got to put the high.
We're not talking about that.
What exactly are these things when they say a chip?
Well, it is. I mean, if you take a consumer video card that, you know, you used to play Call of Duty or, you know, whatever that goes in your PC. If you actually look at that board, there is a very large chip that's on there, along which, and it has a lot of the memory is built into there. And the reason that it has to be close together is because the propagation delay of, you know, I mean, the speed of light is a thing you can't get around. So the closer all of this stuff is together, and the fewer interconnects, the faster it can run. But in the AI context, what we're talking about as a chip is really kind of a board that's a carrier for the actual processing unit, and then whatever heat sinking is necessary in order to get the heat out of it so it doesn't melt. And one of the things that HP has been doing is figuring out how to retrofit water cooling on these things, because water is a much better conductor of heat than air. And so, you know, there's all
talk about going back to the future. That at Pullman, the IBM one of those things where 2022s down in Dallas were all water cooled.
Right. Well, although the mainframes, the older IBM mainframes, were water cooled for the same reason, because they basically had a radiator in them for all intents and purposes. Working on those is a lot of fun, because obviously you have to drain it, because moisture and electronics don't really get along very well, right? But there's all kinds of stuff like that that goes into this. But Huawei's been at this. And one of the things, though, that I find utterly ridiculous is that all this so-called AI stuff and the crazy that's going on with this, I noted on Tuesday that one of these things invented a citation and a direct quote from me that I never did. Okay,
was it a good one? Was it a good one?
Oh, that's the thing. I could never sue anybody over it, because it actually made me look like I had an IQ of about 450, and my head was the size of a watermelon.
So if Lincoln would have used it and the thing popped up with the Gettysburg Address, could he still use it?
Well, it was flattering. All right, it wasn't defamatory. It was ridiculously flattering. All right, so, but here's the danger in this. All right, these things, as a general rule, do not provide the actual links, the actual citations themselves that allow you to run them down. You have to go look. They have been caught many times creating the same kind of whole cloth weave when it comes to legal citations in briefs that they have been involved in. Well, you use an AI to write a brief, right? Same kind of thing has happened.
All right, we have to go to break, but I want you to continue this after break. But I have a quick question before break.
Yeah.
How do those guys, again, this is Luddite me, not you, every time I try and do some research on the internet, I bump into somebody's, Washington Post, unless you're a subscriber, you can't, we don't give you back issues, we don't give you that stuff. I mean, how does AI jump into the DePaul Law Library and get everybody's briefs from 30 years ago?
Well,
how do they get into the stuff that's published in the courts?
Well, published opinions are public.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
But where? All these places are charging to get there.
Well, not necessarily. I mean, like, for example, you can go onto the Supreme Court site and you can look up all the cases that they've ever decided.
Okay.
They're all there. Now, I mean, some of them are PDFs and they're basically scans because they were originally, typed.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, you go back far enough and you find that. But, I mean, if you want to read the entire Roe decision, the real one, the whole thing, you can. You don't have to pay to get to that. All right. But this was also part of the thing that Trump said. He said, well, China, when it comes to AI, is ignoring copyright. All right. So in other words, they're training their stuff on, whatever. They don't give a damn about having to buy it, the material. They're just stealing it. So guess what?
Well, that's been their modus operandi for 50 years.
Yeah. So you know what he said? He said, we're not going to force people to buy it here either.
That's interesting.
That right there is articles of impeachment stuff today.
Well, trying to stay away from the Trump stuff. But how do you have, when you put somebody in a spot that has virtually no training in any of this stuff, and yet he thinks that everything in the world that's his opinion is the fact, how do you not expect this?
Well, I do expect this, but you know what? Here's the thing. This is what we get for not slamming the door on China's fingers 20 years ago, and we still won't.
Well, S&P futures up 7, NASDAQ futures up 6. Real quick break. Back to Carl, because we're talking about some good stuff. Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. As you all know, the broad markets, especially tech, have been hot for a while. Lots of reasons. New technology, small fixed income returns, a lot of Fed cash, maybe some good management. Recently, however, the rates on fixed income investments, even U.S. Treasury, have risen from the very low levels.
Treasuries are more attractive. There might even be some interesting bonds out there. Also, the bull run has some leading stocks with historically high valuations, maybe making long-only positions a little riskier. So what to do? I think the answer is flexibility. The market may keep going higher. It may not. It could even go down. Is fixed income a thought for some part of the portfolio? Rates are not zero anymore. You may want to protect some gains. Think about some rebalancing, address some growing concentration issues, maybe thinking about commodities. We at PTI may have a solution just right for you. Open an account at PTI Pro Direct, PTI's online trading platform using the Interactive Broker high-end platform. There you will find competitive rates and solid execution across all product lines and traditionally high interest on money balances. In addition, at any time you can seamlessly decide for fixed income investments to access Dan Janitas at Kratos Capital for management services. Dan and his team work tirelessly to achieve the highest returns they can, whatever risk category you are comfortable with. You can also quickly access my team for investment services and a wide array of investment strategies on the security or commodity side, protective strategies, concentration issues, or straight long. In one place, you'll be able to be flexible and ride whatever the future market holds with people you are used to hearing and trusting every day. Need help? You got it. Don't need help? That's okay, too. You'll have a great self-management platform with help always available. This market can change on a dime. I believe, like everyone else, having the right people there if needed is the way to go. Call me at 312-663-4310 or email me at time@ptisecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ricky on the board of SP Futures. I was going to say up a buck and a half, but now it's 3.5. We've been flipping back and forth here. They actually have not gone negative, but the NASDAQ is up 1. It has been down as much as 10. So we're kind of flipping back and forth across the flap line, looking like it might be a Friday in the summer. Go figure. It is Friday in the summer. Over in Europe, they were down earlier. Let's see what they're doing now. The LVMH had a big pop because they had better than expected earnings. They're evidently putting some factory in Texas as well. With DAX down 153.6%, FTSE down 35.4%, kick around unchanged. In Asia, these guys are sinking fairly significantly. Nikkei down 370, that's 0.9%. Hang Seng down 278, that's 1.1%. And the Shanghai, not so much, down 12.3%. So Asia is down and Europe is down a little bit. Bonds, that's 4.41, so they're unchanged. The Bund up 4 basis points, 2.73. Japan unchanged at 1.61. It's still, boy, I'd like to get a shot. Maybe Carl could hack in there for me. See what the balance sheet looks like for the European Central Bank that bought all those bonds at negative interest. They got to be, well, if you valued them, they still got to be, if you know that was 5 years ago, they still got to be 50 cents on the buck. Ouch. Oil, up 36 cents, but still 66.39. Oil has not been an issue for now since the one day when Russia was going to cut back, or somebody was, then they didn't. Brent up 37 cents, 69.65. Natural gas up 2 cents, 3.11. Gold down 30 bucks. It had a huge run up early in the week, and now it's been slinking back down a little. 33.43, still pretty high. Silver down 22 cents, 39. Never made it to 40. I don't think they ever made it to 40. FX, 117 on the euro, which is kind of where it's been. 134 on the pound's a little lower. FX is maybe not as much lower. Crypto, and this is interesting. We get Carl's opinion on this. Tesla's allegedly selling some Bitcoin. Bitcoin's down 29.54 to 116.198. Ricky, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Morning, Chief. It's currently 7:37 a.m. here in Chicago. We're looking at 76 degrees right now with a high of 79. Mostly cloudy and humid with a couple of showers and a possible heavy thunderstorm today. This forecast remains for tonight as well as a flash flooding warning and a low of 73 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 80 degrees right now with a high of 109. Very warm with plenty of sunshine and tonight will be clear with a low of 80 degrees. Inbound Kennedy from Monroe's in Chicago, 25 minutes. 39 minutes. Inbound Innes from Lane Cook. Eisenhower from Wolf, 23 minutes. Dan Ryan from 95th, 17 minutes. And lastly, Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 24 minutes. Let's talk MLB. Today we got Diamondbacks at Pirates, 5:40 p.m. And Northside versus Southside here in Chicago. Cubs at White Sox at 6:40 p.m. Back over to you guys.
But Carl, when this China thing is such a multifaceted, it makes the Epstein situation like child's play. I mean, I got the Epstein situation on probably five different levels of the chessboard, no matter where you are, from the creep, the criminal, to who the people are, to the protection, to the money changing hands, to nobody cares about the money. I can't, well, I guess I can believe that the guy who sort of is at the middle of the money,
starting out is this Leslie Wexner. Nobody's ever interviewed the guy. Never talked to him.
Well, you know, I just see this all this stuff that's going on right now. You know, I called AI digital tulips the other day.
Yeah.
And one of the things you have to realize something about computers. Like I've been writing code now for almost five decades.
What do you mean? Okay. You're only 25.
Uh-huh. No BS. I've almost been doing this now for 50 years for money. Right? People paid me. First time that I actually wrote code for money, I was 13.
Whoa.
All right. Now,
what do you mean you wrote code? You punched him on the card.
Actually, I figured out how to modify in the monitor a piece of code that was loaded from punch tape.
Really?
Yeah. In a bookkeeping machine. And Burroughs wanted $3,000 to change the tape. And it took me about 4 or 5 hours to figure out. And this is with no instruction set references. Actually, I mean, that was pure hacking. Okay, not in the bad way, but
as opposed to impure hacking, you know.
Well, hacking for a not only defensible but appropriate purpose, right? I mean, you know, to solve a business problem as opposed to breaking into something. And so the thing is, though, is I have never in my life, I never have. And I don't think I ever will. I've never seen a machine go out of scope from the code that was written. I've never seen it happen. Now, I've seen bugs, okay, lots of those. And by the way, those always produce an undesirable outcome, frequently crash the program. And in the old days, before you had protection for the operating system, they crashed the machine. So it's, you know, you get a reset at best or a lockup. But you know, today's world, where you do have that protection, unless the error is in the operating system, it just destroys the program. It kills it. Or it produces crap, okay, as opposed to whatever it is that it was supposed to produce. But I've never seen a machine actually go out of scope. And here is the problem with all of these things that they're calling hallucinations, okay? They're not. They are a result of the coding decisions that were made by the people that wrote the software. And I believe I know exactly what it is that's driving it. And it's this. The machine's prime directive, its prime purpose for the software, is to produce a result that results in a billable event. All right. Why? Because you pay to use this thing. Right? I mean, that's the entire point.
Like a lawyer. What? Like a lawyer.
Well, exactly. So you pay to use the thing, okay? If you're selling time on your AI, you're charging people money. All right. If the AI comes back and says, "I don't know," you don't get paid.
So it has to make something up, you know.
So right, and because the prime directive is,
well, people have been doing that for a while. Certainly attorneys.
Gee, do you think? Okay. So, I mean, all right. So here's the other thing that goes along with this. We as a species are really, and the BS that's going on today isn't really any different than what pharaohs were doing in Egypt. They built the pyramids using slaves. All right. Guess what?
I think they had a little help with those.
Well, maybe they did, maybe they didn't. But I'll tell you what. We are, you know, this story that just came out of Arkansas, these people had a dungeon that were doing the sort of thing to kids, but worse than what Epstein was doing.
Oh, God.
And it's Arkansas or Alabama. I don't know. One of the A's, that general part of the country. I just hit the wire. I read like about three lines of it, and I'm like, oh, my God.
Well, animals, you know, animals don't do this kind of stuff that humans do.
Well, this is the thing, okay? Yeah, I mean, we're, you know, evil is not a new construct for humanity, right? If we ever, just posit that you know, Elon's folly with Mars and this and that and thing, which I, you know, I have a podcast that's going to come out tomorrow that actually goes into some of the reasons why this is just complete BS. It's never going to happen. But it sells.
What do you mean? Haven't you ever watched Star Trek?
Yes, I have. By the way, if AI produces a Zefrin Cochrane, then you could make an argument that all this money that's being blown actually has a return. I don't think it's going to occur. But, you know, if it does, there you go. However, even in that case, given the demonstrated malignancy of the human condition, if we have been discovered, if there are aliens, if they really exist, and they have found us, and they discern that we are now becoming a interplanetary species, we've developed the ability to get off this rock.
Didn't they make a movie about this once?
Chief, if
the day the Earth stood still,
they're going to kill every one of us.
I remember that was the movie, wasn't it? The day the Earth stood still?
Yeah, we're all going to die.
Yep.
Because we have proved over time that we are worse than apes.
Yeah.
By a substantial margin. And if there are reasonably intelligent creatures out there that have figured out faster than light travel and, you know, and all this other stuff, and they see this, they are not going to let that off this rock.
What did the guy say? If you can have all your petty wars here, but once you start spreading them around, we're going to come by and kick your ass. Basically, wasn't that the message?
Well, you know, yeah, essentially the bottom line is you go ahead and you know, whatever you want to do on your rock, we'll leave you alone. The minute you try to leave and take it somewhere else, you're going to die.
Yeah, and here's the robot that's going to do it.
Yeah, hey, that's right.
I got a question for you. You know, unbeknownst to yourself, you are becoming more and more middle of the road on some of these issues, but I'm not going to insult you. I'm just going to say, I don't know if you listen to our two guys from Washington, Wayne and Andrew, I find absolutely fascinating because they're such a... But, you know, a lot of the stuff, I don't know if you listen... I mean, obviously, I listen very closely. I mean, I do this because I love to learn. You have been ranting and raving for as long as I've known you regarding somewhere along the line, people have to be, you know, brought to justice on stuff that's clearly wrong, even though they've done it for so long they think it's okay. And by the way, nobody... I don't think I've ever disagreed with you on that. And then you have this whole Epstein situation where I've been talking about my little flurry with that kind of stuff when I was on the board of the SIBO is when the right people, however you want to call it, end up in the crosshairs of justice.
Right.
How there's always this trade-off. And what are you going to accomplish here? I mean, if you go after them, or are you tarring everybody's backside, or what are you doing here? And it's interesting that you bring that up about, you know, healthcare and all the other kind of stuff. And those guys were talking yesterday about the, and I have been on record 100 times that as much as I, whatever, I'm not a fan of the man in the Oval Office, Mr. Trump. I think this is a real tough call for him. Not even if he wasn't in there is part of it, because I really don't think he was ever down at the island. And I think he's had a real issue with women his whole life, but I certainly don't know enough to accuse the guy of taking some 14-year-old on the island, because I don't think he ever did. I hope not.
I have seen nothing that leads me to believe that he's into kids.
Okay, but what I'm saying is he an absolute creep when it comes to women? Well, the evidence has been there for 50 years on that. I mean, there's...
But you know what? Consenting adults are free to do exactly that.
I mean, he was down as low as he could on the adults. And he pushed money. But where I'm going with this is that...
Adults are adults, though.
Even he doesn't deserve this. Look at all these names. What are we going to do about it? Are we going to expose them? Are they something we can... And the Democratic... And this is not a Democratic-Republican thing, but the Democratic senator who I learned a lot from, who came on and talked about the account with the 4,100 wire transfers,
right,
and all the money... I don't know if you heard it yesterday, but Andrew and Wayne were listening to that guy at some speech a while ago where he first said that.
Yeah.
And they went up to him afterward and they said, you know, there's three whistleblowers in this room that are willing to talk to you about this if you really want to dig in. And they said there was blue smoke coming out of his ass. He couldn't get out of there fast enough. I mean, nobody wants to really be the guy.
Right.
It's like every bleep hole in the world who thinks he's a stud cake
is all for the death penalty. I right guarantee you not one of those guys gets pulls the lever. Not one. And, and I don't know why I seem like I'm a voice in the wilderness when I talk about this. This is an ongoing human event, especially when people have been cheating so long that they get so powerful that people think it's okay. I think that if it was you and I in there, and you know, we have other people on the show that actually believe that somewhere along the line, regular people have to say enough. You can't do that. Right. I'm one of those people. I never once said I wanted to be the guy to do it. I think I would, if I campaigned on it or if I promised people that, I would certainly feel obligated. But what if that, even the Kennedy thing, I've said 100 times, I think it's abhorrent that we have a popular president that was assassinated and we don't seem to really care whether we found out who did it or not. You know, we had some BS thing. Yet, I don't know if I want to be sitting in the Oval Office, which I'll never be, and all of a sudden four names pop on the top that not only may still be alive, but their family is, or it's a huge indictment of our central intelligence agent or somebody else. I don't know if the American people are ready for that, and I don't know if it's my call. I mean, I don't know whose call it is, the Pope's or Jesus Christ. I'm sitting there, well, how all of a sudden do I get to make this call? What made me so Solomon? You know, I've always had a feeling like that. I never felt I was Solomon, even though, you know, I'd like to learn stuff. I don't know. Okay, should I, let's just say, for instance, it's George Bush. Do I really want, with the family he has and so forth, now whether or not they're crooks or not, you know, I don't know. Do I really want every granddaughter, every cousin, everybody in the world know that my great-grandfather assassinated Kennedy? Am I going to be so sure that that's the truth that I'm going to lob that one out there? Or am I really going to say, by the way, the CIA, which people have had thoughts about for all these years, let's throw them under the bus and start all over and fire half the assholes that are over there? I mean, I don't want to do that. I mean, yet I know somehow on some level it has to happen, Carl. And it's amazing how you and I and Wayne and Kevin are all talking about the same thing, but it's the same problem, isn't it?
Well, yeah. And the thing is that we are now in a situation, and this is when Obama came in and essentially rammed Obamacare through Congress. Okay. At the time it was happening, the healthcare system was in the process of a collapse.
Without a doubt.
But
not many people knew that.
Right, but it was.
Yeah.
But it was.
Yeah.
Okay. It was in the process of a collapse because the capacity to pay had been exceeded by the cost, driven by all of the uneconomic, felonious acts of actors within the sector across the board.
It had been paid for previously by people with Cadillac policies that were paying too much and covering the other people, and that ship was sailing.
Well, that ship had sailed because
it had been in the process of sailing for a while. You're right.
Right, but the thing is that it was that where it was going to go, and what was actually driving it when you got to the end of it, was something that was obvious to me back in the 1990s when I was running my company, and I ended up having to interact with it at that level beyond myself because I had people that got screwed who were my employees, okay? And they came to me because we were a relatively small company. They could, you know, they could come into my office and, you know, put their tale of woe on the table, right? And I looked at it and said, that's bullshit, you know? Yeah. Give me a waiver because otherwise, you know, under HIPAA, I can't get involved in this. But if you give me a written waiver, I can, as essentially appointed as an attorney in fact, you know, the power of attorney for this purpose. Yes, there is a legal way. And by the way, I have the backside information in order to ram this up somebody's door and did it several times. Well, then you start digging into, okay, where is this coming from? And what you find is this insane degree of collusion and things that have been illegal for 100 years. And, you know, I mean, at the time...
And essentially codified the illegality.
But at the time, they've been illegal for 80 years.
Right,
here's the thing. They were never... There was never an actual act of Congress that made these acts legal.
I'm with you.
Okay.
But the timing on this... And this is what's kind of screwy, and it makes...
This has been going on for decades.
But I'm saying it makes what Churchill said about America, they'll eventually do the right thing if they try everything else first.
Once they run out of other ideas,
When we had the early stages of the Clinton administration, which would have been what, 92?
Yeah.
And I, you know, I knew some people in the healthcare industry, and I didn't get into it on a. Well, we were already, you know, PTI was already alive. We're paying. Well, let's put it this way: when I started in 80 or 81 on the trading floor, I was just before I did my first contract, first options picked up my healthcare. And when I hired a clerk, the guy who was married and had two kids, it was cost me $75 a month.
Right.
So that was 1980. Well, fast forward to 1992 when Clinton got in, right? Well, things had degraded dramatically, as Carl just eloquently said, essentially during the 80s, right? Where the old way of hospitals covering the stuff by the, you know, charging the people $100 for diapers going out the door, that had pretty much fallen apart. So now you have. So Hillary, never read it, don't know if it was a good idea, bad idea, starts his health care, where all the other crap Bill was doing, somehow or another the thing lands like a fart in church in Congress. I don't know if it was all Republicans or half the Democrats. They say, well, yeah, we can't do this, blah, blah, blah. So, okay, the thing dies for 8 years. Bush comes in, and then all of a sudden he has 9/11 and everything else. I don't know if he ever had any intention. But now when Obama comes in, we're now 17 years after a problem
down the road, right?
A problem was identified. I have to believe whatever the solution would have been in Clinton's, if he'd, you know, kept the zipper zip, maybe it got through. I don't know, but somewhere along the line, we were way better off if we'd have done something 16 years earlier. Now, the thing's a total mess when Obama gets in there. Now, of course, he doesn't have the attention to detail to try and figure out what he was doing, to the point where it has now become such a massive cost issue, you can't just move the teacups around over who's paying. Somehow he that went right by him, and all of a sudden the drug companies got way too close to the writing of this bill than they ever should have been, and we end up with somewhat of a disaster that the Republicans have had a chance to fix and don't, and the Democrats don't, and we're just left with this thing, and now we're just kind of pulling back on it so people aren't covered, and now we're at the worst of all worlds. Is that a fair summation?
Well, I would argue that this wasn't about Obama not understanding it. He actually allowed the people from the medical and insurance industries to write the bill. That was a deliberate decision. I think
some of these people.
Well, and by the way,
I think he was just lazy.
Well, but okay, perhaps I don't know. I don't lazy. You know what? Laziness and stupidity are indistinguishable and corruption are indistinguishable at a certain level. Okay, unless you can get inside someone's head, figuring out which is you're dealing with is kind of tough.
Okay, I mean, if the dude, let's put it this way, when I talk about Obama, and if you pick 40 subjects, the dude blows me away in probably 35 of them. Knowledge of world events, knowledge of this. Yet, I think I would have realized that this is such a major thing going forward for just about everybody. I better be on this thing like white on rice, and make sure that this thing does not go spitting off the rails because one industry wants it or doesn't. Because it's the one chance it's taken how many years to come together. I think it was so important to do it right. And yet, for the people involved, it just became important to do something and do
it
fast.
Well, actually, I'll go further. I think it was malicious and malignant on purpose, and the entire purpose of it was that we had, at that point, by the time that Obama came in and did this, we had driven a tremendous percentage of the so-called expansion of the GDP and expansion of our so-called economy on this shift this grift.
And I think they
and in order to, and if you reverse it, all that comes back out.
Okay.
And he knew that.
I don't think. I mean, I have no idea. I mean, if the dude was here, we could ask him.
You go from 15% of GDP to 5, okay? And what happens? But why 10%?
Why does every bill that comes out, not just that bill, is 80% of it's a piece of trash to get the other stuff done? Somehow or another, these guys, whoever it is, can't seem to come out with a bill that does the job right. I mean, how long has it been?
Here's the reality, okay? What's about to happen at the end of this year is that cliff is coming back, okay? Now, that's going to generate probably 6 or 7 million Americans who either through economic reasons or simply because they're not going to pay $10,000 a year for something that has no value, all right? They're going to run naked, either by force or by choice. By the way, I'm one of them because I'm not 65 yet, so I don't qualify for Medicare yet. Okay? I'm in that box. Now, if you take that gamble, whether by force or choice, and you lose the bet, in other words, a year down the road from now, the doc comes, you know, I've got some hacking thing going on, it won't go away. I go to the doc takes a look at it, he runs some kind of a test, he says, hey, jackass, you have cancer. Okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Now my options are simple. I can attempt to expend however much money I have to try to beat it, and it will probably fail. All right? In which case, I die impoverished. All right?
Well, you can also probably go to Europe. By the way, just to bring this up,
hold on a minute. I want to lay this out because I don't want to run out of time before I get done. All right? That's option one. Option two is I'm dead and they're all free. And guess what? There's 3 million of me, and there's a whole bunch of people, because every single state, local, national lawmaker, every single cop, I don't care if it's federal, state, whatever, every single employee in the medical system, you were all part of this. You and your children have been eating and living in a nice house because you screwed me for the last 30 years. And by God, I am not qualified to judge whether or not that is something that deserves to be punished. God is the only one who's qualified, but I can arrange that the meeting happens tomorrow.
Can I show you how much you are? I hate to do this to you. Can I show you how much you're right? 2,000. Greg Pappas sent this to me. This is an average annual worker and employer contribution to a family coverage, 1999 to 2024.
Yep.
In 2000, what do you suppose the annual contribution was? This is an employer and employee. And then combined. Do you have a figure? Actually, I would have been real right if I'd have.
My guess would be, now this is for family coverage.
Yeah, and this is for PTI paying for you, and then the piece of it you have to pick up.
Okay. Well, I would take a guess that on average, you're probably on the employer side, price $6,000.
Actually, you're close. $4,800 in the employee contribution, $16,000. Now,
I'm extrapolating from what I did pay when I was running my company.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's what I would have said. We probably had a bigger contribution to PTI because we paid a bigger piece. But the total is $6,400.
Yeah.
Would you have a guess as what it is today?
$30,000.
Actually, $26,000.
All right, I'm close.
With the employer, the employee now paying more for his contribution than the whole amount was in 2000.
Correct.
Yeah,
correct.
This is 6% of the basket.
And by the way, we don't get any better results.
Okay, so now you could, now if you want to be like this, which is what I do that pisses people off, if you were to say that, by the way, this really is your compensation, okay?
Yeah.
So if PTI is paying you $75,000 a year, okay, and the contribution here is $25,000. Your salary is really $100,000, correct?
Right.
All right. So, and this is assuming that you never buy a Band-Aid, you never go to the doctor on your own, you never do anything on your own, whatever. That sounds a lot to me like 25% of your basket, not six.
Right. It is. But here's the, all right, so here's the other thing. Do you know why we got here, Chief? And it's not because people didn't Luigi a bunch of healthcare executives. It's because people like you and I, for the last 25 years, have refused to take a simple, lawful step that we could all take today. And that is, if you work in this industry, or you are a lawmaker, or you are a family member of them, you're pariahs in the community. You will not sit in the same pew. You will not sit in the bar and drink a beer with these people. If that guy walks in the door, check, please. You're out. That's it. You turn them into people that literally have to live in their own little hovels with nobody else to talk to. You make them socially unacceptable. You see them on the street, the middle finger goes up.
Except for the fact that the worker bees, the nurses, the assistants, and now, by the way, the doctors are just the hired help.
Oh, guess what? You know what? If they all told the people who are pulling the strings to go stick it in their butt, it would change in a day.
How hard is that for people to do? It's getting harder and harder.
I was just gassing the Jews because I was ordered to, and it was my job.
What I'm saying, it's getting... I had, you know, it makes me the goofball that I am today. I lived at home till I was 32.
Chief, you know why you won't do it? Because one of your friends is one of the people that's in the bar that you work with.
I think that I would be one of the knuckleheads that actually would do it. I'm just saying how much I wouldn't want to and how big of a job it is.
Yeah, it's a huge job. And by the way, you would have to exclude from your life and screw people that you claim to care about.
I'd never be able to go to my brother's for breakfast for dinner anymore. I wouldn't even let people know I had a family.
Right, but you'd have to do this.
Yeah, well, some...
And you know what? If people will... And you know what? We could... Not a single law would be broken doing any of that. Not a single law.
Well, I mean, the reason why... I mean, you look at... Well, we only got a minute here, but we don't even have a minute. But I'm going to say the reason why... One of the reasons why... well, he's a really, really good friend of all my lawyer friends, but we became pretty good friends. Mike Tooman, this judge. And here's a guy who was a little bit of a rebel. Yeah, he ends up getting booted out of New Trier, joins the Marines, comes back, goes to law school, and becomes this...
Well, he got thrown on New Trier. Okay.
Yeah, well, you know, he took the security guard's squad car for a joyride.
Yeah, that'd do it.
So his dad or somebody gets him back in New Trier, and he goes, why'd you do that for? I don't like the place anyway, or something. So he joins the Marines. Anyway... But the dude has been absolutely this little, you know, 5'6" Irish dude, tough as can be. And he, in one hand, you look at it and you go, man, that's really unbelievable. And he took on these cases, Jeff Fort and all these people where he's getting life threatened.
Yeah.
You know what, though? Kind of, he didn't have a family. His sister, I think, had already moved to California.
Yeah.
And I don't know that Judge Tooman could have been Judge Tooman if he had five kids and everybody knew where they were.
Well, you know what? See, the fact that we as humans, we deserve, in this country, we deserve every bit of what we're about to get in the butt and what we've been getting in the butt, because we have had a peaceful and lawful means to stop it all the way down the line, and we've refused to do it. And every one of us needs to take responsibility for that. But that is the last thing.
But how does somebody, when somebody goes to the Supreme Court and says, by the way, these networks where you're charging people all these different prices, and we're PTI, if we're big enough, we can't self-insure any of this because...
It's a felony.
It goes to the Supreme Court and they say, it's a felony. Well, we do have police. We have FBI. I don't know that we want to or we're capable of or it's in our blood anymore to say, well, if they're not going to do it, I'm going to do it. Because then... The people that do that are the losers that go out and kill politicians. I mean, it's not what we are either. I mean,
Well, you know what? Yes, but you know what? If every one of the people that were involved in this couldn't so much as go to church without getting the middle finger in their face,
organized. We're really talking about is an organized quiet revolution.
You don't have to do anything violent or illegal.
That's what I'm saying.
It's not necessary.
But it has to be amazingly organized.
It doesn't have to be amazingly organized. It just has to be people getting tired of this crap.
What people do you know at your church, if you go to one, have any idea who the executives are and the people? Let's kick this around more on Tuesday.
They all know who the doctor is that works at the local clinic.
And I'm saying that guy right now is barely able to make his medical school payments.
And that guy could stop all of it if he and everybody else organized and said, it ends now. And he won't, because he is too inured to the idea that he deserves that Mercedes and he deserves that nice house and his kids deserve to go to college.
I'm going to say that if you and I offered him a different solution instead of having to join a group because that's how the insurance is done, those guys don't want to be in it. They're all retired.
He has a solution. It's to get together with the other doctors and tell them all to go to hell.
Well, I tell you what, if we were to do this in Orleans, say, I'll bet Audrey and her pals know at least 10 doctors that are in their 60s that have retired early because they don't want to put up with it and love to go another way. They would love to have that happen if we did it. Love to have
well,
it happen.
Well, you know what? We're not willing to put the pressure on the people. That's the bottom line.
I'm saying these guys would be they'd be with us in a second if we showed them another way. But who does it?
There is another way. It's just but people have to have the nuts.
Yeah, but how many people do you know that can organize the other way? They're not entrepreneurs
see,
like you.
It doesn't have to be organized. You just have to be tired of this shit. And that's the thing. Everybody, as long as they're getting theirs, they don't care. How many people say Congress sucks, but my congressperson brings a bacon home and I'll vote for him?
Is my stepfather used to say something real intelligent once in a while. He goes, it's a hell of a lot easier to curse the darkness than it is to be the guy that lights the candle.
Well,
he's right about that. I mean,
yeah, and you know what? It's lighting the candle's tough because it means you have to make decisions that have an impact on you.
Well, that's exactly right. SP futures up 2, NASDAQ futures down 17. Enjoy yourself this weekend. They keep saying it's going to cool off here. It's still 90%. Somehow or another, they moved me to St. Louis, and I don't like being
Chief, we're going to get another week of this, and then I think it'll break. And this is all from the ENSO. The ENSO is neutral right now. And this is an unusual situation. It's usually either La Nina or El Nino. It's neutral. That perturbs the jet stream, and it changes the pattern. It has nothing to do with global anything.
Well, yeah.
This will change.
Hey, you know,
because it's not going to change. It's Tuesday, not going to stay neutral.
Ricky, write this down, will you? On Tuesday, let's talk a little bit about massive weather changes in the past. I mean, what if we had the Dust Bowl today? What would we be calling? Anyway, let's just talk about Tuesday. We're way over. SP futures up 3. NASDAQ futures down 14. Everybody have a good weekend. Some good trading today. We got some good stuff today going for our clients, so hopefully it'll continue. I'll be right back tomorrow. I'll be right back Monday morning, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.